joining us in the studio today are two masters of their styles, stronger than ever. Back by the man. No matter what style of music you're into, from punk to funk, back by the man. It's all here on Volume 2. Back by the man. You asked for it, you got it.
All right, we got a special edition here.
With the coffee and wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Special edition Mood of Scale coming right after the Monday Night Raw that followed Royal Rumble. So Royal Rumble was a pretty big deal. So
yeah, after all that rehearsing you did with your opening segment, you ruined it with that cough, dude.
What rehearsing?
You're killing me.
Jeez.
You're standing. You had the stones in your mouth, and you're gurgling water and stuff, and
the salt water.
You cut this great opening, and you're like,
I even
hey, welcome to the Mood of Scale.
I even brought a podium in and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now Mood of Scale, 15 must be.
Yeah, you got it right this time. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I'm not really good with numbers, as you know. But when I know last week was a big number 14, it can help me to remember this is 15. Once we get past that, I'm gonna be lost again. But
which is more of the norm, right? Yeah.
Yes, but because it was 14, because it was your number. Then
I'm surprised you found your way here again without giving me a call that says what street you want to get.
I actually did turn on 6 and I was like, wait a minute, this is not right. But
you're just playing in my hand today. Everything you're doing,
I'm just hey. Numbers are not my bag, baby. But anyway, yes. Yeah, so pretty good Raw tonight, actually, and coming off of what ended up being a really big Royal Rumble, and obviously like the big talk is the title change, the end of the 434 day reign of CM Punk, and the belt going back to The Rock. And so I just kind of wanted to pick your brain, Mr. Bad News Ramen. Like, how do you feel? You know, like a lot of the internet community is kind of pissed that CM Punk's not the champ. And I find it kind of funny because, you know, Rock was such a big deal for so long, and people still, in general, really like The Rock. But is it like why is it that so many people are angry? How do you feel? I mean, I know you really grew to. I know both of us were really big Rock fans, and I know we both really come to like the run that Punk's had. I just want to get your thoughts and maybe kind of tie a bow up on. Dude, this is the best championship run we've seen since we were kids, and Hulk Hogan was carrying it, right? So we haven't seen anyone hold a belt for a year.
I wouldn't even say Hulk Hogan. I mean, I'd more liken it to a Ric Flair, you know, holding the title.
I'm just talking about in terms of time. I mean, you and.
Well, I just don't like anything that's compared with CM Punk and Hulk Hogan and use them in the same sentence, you know. So
all I'm saying is we haven't seen anyone hold a belt for over a consecutive year since Hogan did.
Yeah, but I think you put the word in great in there, so you know, or something, you know.
Your use of the word great is the first time.
It was some positive spin on something about having Hulk Hogan hold a title for a year. I'm just giving you a bad time, but I want to first off and say that I'm not, you know, flipping out because CM Punk lost it. I mean, did I want to lose it? No, I didn't want him to lose it. But I knew that the job had to be done. And I think it just really kind of shows, you know, when CM Punk came out for this Raw and just did this ripping promo, it's like the guy's still doing the business. You know, he's still doing the job. And then when The Rock comes out, cuts his promo, and then CM Punk comes out again, just does a killer promo. I think the reason why there's so much backlash to it was, for the most part, you know, The Rock is part of the machine. I mean, you know, he was part of the machine during his run during WWE. I think what a lot of people saw was the tail end of Rock's career when he was a face and, you know, could sell the shirts and do everything that John Cena is doing now. But I think they kind of forget about Rock's kind of beginning. I mean, Rock really kind of, you know, Rock along with Austin, and I'm not even going to say, like, I think Rock, even more so than Austin, really brought in that great character, and you know, he was the best heel around. I mean, by far. Like, if you're going to put heels, you know, if you're going to put heels, like, you know, your classic heels, you know, you have, you know, Ric Flair is a classic heel. Macho Man is a classic heel. Even Bret Hart, to a small part, is a classic heel. Rock was the first one to become, like, this classic heel that everybody still liked because he was so original and it was so good on the mic. I think the other token of that, too, is, you know, if you want me to put a bow on CM Punk's title reign, I'm sad to see him not have the belt. Yeah, I would have liked for him to hold it to the Elimination Chamber. I think the people on the internet have this connection with Punk because he's one of their own. You know, and the reason why I say that is because he's done it on his terms. And the realness of what he's done and what he's accomplished in the WWE, it's like everything that he's had to go through, everything, because us as fans, we have to fight the WWE too. As fans, you know, we have to put up their bullshit, you know, of a John Cena, of these guys that they're trying to push. And CM Punk was finally one of these guys that we connected with because he didn't fit the norm. You know, he did have the tattoos. He's a skinny, small guy. You know, he's a vegetarian. You know, what you see is pretty much a close reflection of what the guy is. You know, even when you know he's doing his heel stuff, even when you know, when he's doing his face stuff, you can kind of see that middle guy in there. I think that's why there's such a big backlash. But, I mean, for the whole, you know, the whole part is that what people on the internet forget, and this is kind of what, you know, you're watching WWE, you're going to have necessary evils of the WWE. Right. You know, Vince likes closure. You know, Vince, you know, and I tweeted this out, you know,
yeah, I saw that earlier.
Cena did the job for The Rock. Now it's time for Rock to do the job for Cena and kind of anoint Cena as kind of the guy. But that's the way it's going to be. I mean, we've had 434 days or whatever it is of CM Punk as champion. We've seen everything that you wanted a champion to be, every type of champion. CM Punk has done. You know, he's done the kind of the up and coming guy right when he's going to take the championship. This cool guy that's like, you know, breaking the norm and stuff, and you know, it's like, you know, doing things his own way. And I'm sorry I'm taking up the whole time, but you know, the past year and a half or whatever it's been that CM Punk's been champion, to me, has been some of the best wrestling I've seen. You know, you have the up and coming guy that becomes champion, you know, he's still kind of trying to establish himself, and then he just becomes that perfect face, you know, where everybody pops for him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the corporate champion as a face, you know, he's the face of the company, and he did that really well, and then he just became a straight heel again. So it's, you know, to put a bow on it, it harkens back to, the, you know, watching wrestling when we were like, you know, 11, 12 years old, 86, 87, mm-hmm. You know, just good solid wrestling like that. And is it sad to see for him to leave it? Yeah, it is, but I've enjoyed it. And I'm not considering to say like, oh, it sucks and I'm so angry and stuff, you know, but it is, you know, it's happened and life goes on and so does WWE storylines, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that the thing that's good, even though that people are pissed, like it kind of shows they're invested, like they're invested in the character, and he sold it really well, and people bought into it, right? And I mean, not that, you know, like kind of like you said, you know, it's not so much that it's a character because it's probably pretty close to who he is, but people liked it and people followed along with it and they care, right? And that's good because, you know, it's like a lot of people haven't cared about anything that John Cena's done in these runs that he's had for a long time. So to see someone come through and people care, you know, I think that's a big thing. It kind of did surprise me because, like, I was thinking, I read what you tweeted out earlier and about how Vince likes the closure, and that was kind of the thing that I was thinking was the reason why I would have liked to see it last until Elimination Chamber. Was I would have liked to see Punk get over now, and then Rock could take it, and then, like, you know, Rock could have done the job for Punk here, and then Punk would do the job for Rock, and then that would all be closed. But maybe not. Maybe this leaves the window open for you know, a year down the line or something. If the Rock comes back, then maybe he can do the job for Punk. You know, you never know. But you know, it wasn't going to last forever, right? He wasn't going to get no 7-year Bruno Sammartino run. I mean, that was clear. And I think it's one of those things, too, like, he held it for so long, and he did so good that, you know, it at least now, it didn't have a chance to get stale, right? Like, if he had held it for way too long, you know, you could see where maybe it does get stale or something like that. So maybe by him dropping it now, you know, it still has that taste that, you know, he can have another good run again, and people are going to want to see it. So I don't think it's the worst thing. And I'm definitely...
Even as long as it's as long as he's had it, it hasn't felt like 434 days.
Right.
You know, because just with what WWE was doing, it's not centered. You know, when Cena had it for that long of a time, it's just pretty much Cena and that's it.
Yeah, well,
you know,
the thing is, and I was thinking about this earlier today because I was reading a tweet from this guy. I know his name's George, and he's like, he's involved in some wrestling promotion in England.
Yeah.
And,
does he follow you?
I think he does.
Yeah. And he's
like, STLD, right?
Yeah.
So he had said, like, he had tweeted something yesterday where he's saying how, like, you know, if people that might hate John Cena's character, but, like, anyone that says that the guy can't wrestle is delusional. And I was kind of thinking about that for a little bit. And I'm like, is he right? And I'm like, you know what? I thought back, and I don't think that Cena has come up with a new move in 10 years. And it's like, I don't think it's just because the character's stale, but it's like the three biggest moves he has is the attitude adjustment, which is pretty weak ass shoulder block, and the one inch
shoulder block vertical.
Yeah, and the five knuckle shuffle, which is also weak.
Well, he has a move that actually subs the five knuckle shuffle. I don't know what that's called. Yeah, that's a decent move.
Yeah,
I like that move.
But it's like, I mean, like the five knuckle shuffle. He's dusting his shoulder off. No one's done that in 10 years. That belt is still the John Cena belt. A spinner. No one's rocked a spinner in 10 years, right? So it's like a bunch of stuff that just has gotten stale and hasn't changed in forever. And in CM Punk having this 1 year run, he reinvented himself about 3 times. And I think that's why the run didn't get tired, because even within one run, he's reinventing himself more times than Cena's done in the last decade.
Well, to add to the whole him reinventing his character, now one thing that George just say is that, you know, to say that the guy can't wrestle is ridiculous or whatever it is. Well, John Cena can wrestle. I mean, and that's the whole thing, is like, you take any wrestler, you know, like, and me and you can go against any wrestler and they're going to take us down because they know how to wrestle, they've had the training. The problem is that, yeah, you're right, in the past 10 years he hasn't changed his moveset. But every single match is the exact same match.
Yes.
And the whole thing is like, you know, people always say, you know, Ric Flair had the same type of match over and over again. I've said that Bret Hart has had the same match over and over again. But the thing is that these guys were so technically sound that, you know, that they were good. If they had to improvise on the fly, they could do that. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing with Punk is you look at the wrestlers that Punk has had to face, and he has adhered himself to that style. You know, to what that person can do and what he can do to that person. I think one of the main ones, the one that always stands out to me, is the Ryback match. You know, it's like this guy wasn't having any good matches with anybody. No storytelling.
You're talking about the ladder match, right?
The ladder match. Yeah. You know, I didn't see the pay per view one, but you know, just to,
the raw ladder match with Ryback.
Just his versatility, yeah. And then he has, you know, then to me he has like three of the greatest matches, you know, over the past, you know, 2 years with Daniel Bryan. I mean, those matches. I mean, I still remember sitting down on my couch and watching these, the first match of three, and I'm just going to go like, Jesus, you know, like, I haven't seen this since the glory days, you know, like 87, 86.
Well, even a year ago, and I know you didn't end up watching it, but the CM Punk and Chris Jericho matches, those matches were great too. And the WrestleMania match that they had, that was a really good match, and the ones they had leading up.
So, do you think, I mean, because the other thing that we're seeing online and stuff, and kind of the whole kind of defensive of kind of going the Cena and Rock route, is that, you know, CM Punk isn't making money for him and the ratings are down because he's a champion. Now, are you a proponent of that, or what do you think of that whole argument?
I mean, obviously I'm not looking at like financial numbers, but for me personally, I mean, I would be much more likely to pay money to see Rock and Punk at a pay-per-view than I would any John Cena match. I can't tell who's making money for them, but I can't say.
Yeah.
But, I would think people are into Punk, and the thing is, like the people that really turned on him when he went heel, they hate him, so they want to see him lose too. Like, no, I mean, I haven't heard anyone say that he's not good. You know, people don't like him because he's a heel, but the guy's good, and I think people want to see him wrestle.
Well, I mean, the one thing we can say about The Rock is that, you know, to me, The Rock is a former show of who this guy was. I mean, and the whole thing is, I didn't like Rock probably like his last 2 years in the WWE when he had a full run, just because he was just a straight baby face. His shtick was getting tired. The whole creativity that was there before wasn't there anymore, because, you know, he kind of, to me, kind of started answering to the fan, you know, to the fan pressures of how you're supposed to be. But the funny thing is about the whole thing with The Rock is I didn't start watching wrestling again until Rock came back on Raw. And that's when I started watching and looking at the product. So, I mean, and now we're kind of coming back where, you know, I mean, it's been like, what, 2 years or 2.5 years, you know, that The Rock's come back in some type of capacity. And, you know, is it nice? It's nice to see him with the belt. I'm not going to say it isn't, but then it just kind of leaves us like, you know, we're talking about this Royal Rumble, and we're talking like, you know, okay, hey, you know, CM Punk is going to lose. We think he's going to stay until Elimination Chamber, but, you know, it's more than likely he's going to lose. And John Cena is going to win the Royal Rumble, you know. So, and I'm kind of thinking like, you know, thinking about today, you know, thinking about coming on today and talking about this, is that there's no swerves thrown. Even at Raw, there's no swerves thrown. It would have been nice to see a swerve, but now it's kind of like, okay, now we're getting back to the WWE that everybody knows. You know, it's like, I felt like this was just kind of like a little petri dish experiment. It's like, let's put all these guys here, let's see what's going to happen, and then, but we're always going to go back to our, you know, we're always going back to our control, which is John Cena, you know, with the title, or someone like The Rock, kind of the old school coming back in, which they're starting to do. You know, Triple H is going to come back with Brock Lesnar, you know, Undertaker's going to come back. So it's like, which kind of sucks, because like the experiment was working. You know, they have all these guys, and like, you look at Cesaro and Randy Orton today. Yeah. Randy Orton's a control guy, but Cesaro put on a great match. Yeah. You know, so I mean, they have these guys that can go, but it's like, well, I'm kind of afraid what business is going to be like. So let's go back to what we know, kind of works. You know, for the mass audience.
Yeah, I mean, and this is I guess in terms of the money thing. I mean, I think Rock definitely will make a lot of money for them. I think everything's timed right to the point where, I mean, the guy's got like 4 movies coming out, so he can go promote a bunch of movies while he's got the belt. So that's good high profile for wrestling that CM Punk really can't give them, right? And, I mean, you know, I got no problem with The Rock, right? I mean, obviously, I like The Rock. I'm not saying that I wanted him to necessarily win this match, right? But I'd much rather have The Rock carrying the belt than Cena, you know? And it's, at least it looks good on Punk that he lost to an all-time legend, right? He didn't go do a job to somebody.
Well, he lost in a questionable way, too.
Right, yeah. Well, and even his promo was really good in that. I really liked the way he tried to turn around. Like, yeah, I'll grant you a rematch, right? Because I never lost it. And, you know, that's good. And that shows his versatility on the mic, that he can come up with these ways to... It's kind of like the way I can justify that, like when the A's lose in the playoffs, that if I check the tree, I think that they really were the second best team in the playoffs. You know, like, I justify to myself, and he's really good at turning that around quick too. So, like, that's part of what makes him really good. But kind of like going to what you were saying, I think the bigger problem is that they keep bringing back guys like The Undertaker and Triple H. Right, you start to build all these characters and these young wrestlers with a lot of talent, and like the things that made Rock, the things that made Edge, the things that made Stone Cold, Shawn Michaels, all these guys, was that they were in big matches at WrestleMania, and you're not given any opportunity to these other guys to have a big match at WrestleMania, because you keep bringing these old guys, these old nostalgia acts, and you know, a nostalgia act's cool, but 5 nostalgia acts on the same show, I don't like that. And then it just keeps pushing down guys like Dolph Ziggler, keeps pushing down, like, not saying that Cesaro would have been the guy this year, okay, but that's a guy that could be down the line. But is he going to, like, maybe next year would be his time to have like a big match in Mania, but is he going to be able to do that, or is they going to dust off Undertaker and Triple H again, you know what I mean? There's a lot of guys, like, you know, obviously we talk about Ziggler a lot. Ziggler's in line. Wade Barrett could be in line to have a big match at WrestleMania. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are really poking through. And as we said, like, the experience pool isn't really deep, but the talent pool is deep right now. But when are they ever going to get a chance? And it's great to let Rock come back, or somebody like that can come back and go. But having too many of them just doesn't make sense to me. and I think, not to go too long-winded here, but another guy that I've been reading a lot of late online is this guy, Seth Mates, who is like a, he used to be like a writer for WWE, and he has some, and basically I think he kind of, he phrased it best where he was saying, you know, do you want to make a lot of money on WrestleMania, or do you want to use WrestleMania to sell the other pay-per-views after WrestleMania? And I think that he's dead on. It's like, yeah, they're going to make a lot of money at WrestleMania, putting in a bunch of big names. But then, is anyone going to buy the next pay-per-view or the next pay-per-view after that? Not likely, because the guys that they need to carry the company are still, they're still holding them down on the bottom of the card when they could really elevate these guys by putting them in big Mania matches.
Well, I agree to that in some small part, but at the same time, it's like, you got to recognize what WrestleMania is. I mean, how many? I mean, they're like at 20 plus now. I mean, the WrestleMania to me is that any fan of wrestling or former wrestling fan can purchase that and get a show, you know. And so, I mean, I do understand that, you know. The way that I kind of see the WrestleMania now is kind of like the Super Bowl of pay per views. Right. You know, it's like, you're going to bring all the big names in. Storylines are going to be in. You know, see, and that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, I just get tired of people going like, you know, oh, you know, it's, you know, WrestleMania should be this or WrestleMania should be. It's not going to be what you want it to be. WrestleMania is what it is. You know, it's like, and there's been a ton of proof year after year after year after year, you know, saying like, this is the way the show is going to be. It's going to have big names. It's going to have, you know, some star coming in. That's the way it is. So either you fight against it or you don't. But the whole thing is recognize it for what it is. And I'm trying to, you know, look at myself and go like, well, am I doing the same thing about Cena? You know, it's like, you know, I get tired of Cena, but like, even today, it's like, okay, I know Cena's going to come out and cut a weak ass promo, but at least, you know, WWE will start doing some stuff to kind of take that away, because I think they're kind of seeing a little bit of it too. You know, you're talking about all this kind of, you made a very good point about all this young talent that they have, you know, and I'm kind of thinking, you know, to, you know, when you bring up The Rock, you know, you bring up Triple H, you bring up all these guys that were cutting their teeth, you know, same thing with like Stone Cold Steve Austin and stuff, and, you know, the Nation of Domination. The one thing that I see that what was there back then and really isn't there now is that you don't have like three guys on the top that are really experienced, you know, that do things for the business, you know. And I'm thinking back then when Rock was first taking off the IC, with the IC belt, you know, Stone Cold and then Triple H, you know, you had The Undertaker, you had Bret Hart, you had, to a small part, you had Shawn Michaels, but I really think, you know, you had a guy like The Undertaker where, like, Undertaker was like it, you know. Yeah. Like, if you didn't pass the muster with Undertaker, you know, you didn't go far in the business. Same thing with like Bret Hart too. Is like, you know, even like, you know, like a Shawn Michaels, Michaels had a ton of backstage politics with that. But you had, you know, kind of likening to like a Cena, you know. Mm-hmm. Cena kind of has that those politics. But you don't have right now, you don't have the experienced guy to really kind of, to me, set the pecking order of the way things should be. You know, it's like, you know, we always kind of bag on The Undertaker and stuff, you know, like Undertaker, you know, this, that, and this. But the whole thing is that the guy was such a presence in the back room. These guys were able to really come up. And I really think a lot of it had to do with The Undertaker. You know, I mean, I think The Undertaker, you know, passed, like, judgment on people seriously and said, okay, you know, because mm-hmm. if you crossed him, then you weren't in good standing with the company. And it's sad to see, like, you know, I want to see a guy like that. Maybe Punk somewhere down the line can be like that. But right now you have all these young guys, but there's no kind of, like, upper echelon guys that have been there and have carried companies for a long time. Yeah. You only have one guy, and who's that one guy? You know, and we all kind of know what that, how that one guy is, you know.
There's actually one guy there that would be good at it, but he's kind of in and out, and that'd be Jericho. I mean, Jericho's done more than anybody, but, you know, he's in and out of the company because he's got so many things to do, so I guess it'd be hard, you know, it'd be hard for him to be that guy. You know, it has to be someone that's stable, that's there all the time. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think Undertaker keeping the locker room in order probably had a lot to do with like, the fact that, you know, you didn't get one guy with a stranglehold on the belt for so long, because you had a bunch of guys that could work, and everyone's kind of getting their shot. But all respect to The Undertaker. But at this point, I mean, you know, you mentioned, like, you know, who makes money and stuff like that. Like, would you if you were going to buy a pay-per-view, would you buy a pay-per-view to watch The Undertaker?
No, I wouldn't. No. No, but I mean, but I would buy WrestleMania to watch WrestleMania, you know, and whatever, you know, I was real close to buying the Royal Rumble, you know, yesterday. You know, like, really?
Really?
Yeah, I was, like, really close to buying it because, you know, we had nothing to do. Like, you know, it's like my daughter was sick, so we really couldn't go anywhere. So I was like, hell, I'm like, you know, might as well just buy the Rumble, you know. But, you know, I didn't end up doing it. But you know, but I was thinking, like, well, what intrigued me about that match? Well, it's like, okay, you have Rock and Punk, and then, you know, you're going to have some special guests on the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind seeing, even though I knew who was going to win. You know, I wanted to kind of see the dynamic, and it's funny, like, what we said about Dolph Ziggler, and which they didn't put on the show on Raw, was like, you know, he lasted in, like, the final six, really showed what he could do,
yeah.
And instead of just, like, kind of really spear-pointing that up, it became of, like, you know, Cena coming out, you know, and...
Yeah, well, I mean, I mentioned it to you, too, like, this is the first time that Ziggler hasn't come out until, like, hour three in months, right? I mean, he usually leads the show... He usually has like a couple segments and a match, and they didn't touch Ziggler until, you know, 2.5 hours in, which I felt was kind of odd, especially like you said, coming off a pretty big performance. But again, you know, it just kind of scares me. I mean, I think a month or 2 months ago, we kind of talked about, you know, this time it needs to happen now, and everything's set up for it. But I had that little 5% in my brain that I was worried that you know, it just might not happen. They might just keep pushing back, and it's kind of looking that way.
Well, how long does the Money in the Bank last? I mean, is that like, that's a
till
contract?
Till WrestleMania.
Okay, so it's not a contract for a full year or whatever it is? Or?
No, it's supposed to run out at WrestleMania.
Okay.
So I don't know if they're going to come up with some gimmick stipulation and extend it past WrestleMania, or if it's going to be like kind of a thing where he's going to have to cash in it, and, you know, everyone's going to know he has to cash in at some point at Mania. But, like, I mean, I don't know, like, just... The whole dynamic of the people that are battling for the World Heavyweight Championship right now, you know, Dolph Ziggler's nowhere involved in that storyline. And then now, I mean, you know, Jericho's like one of my all-time favorites, and I'm glad that he's back. But now you can see they're going to do another angle with Jericho and Ziggler, and obviously that's going to have nothing to do with the World Heavyweight Championship either. So.
Well, and the sad thing is too is that Del Rio over this recent run he's having a great run.
Yeah.
You know, and just his in ring work, that stuff he's doing, he's pulling out stuff that he's done in Japan and stuff that you haven't seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean it's funny, you know, it's here I am saying, like, well, you know, here's the necessary evil of all this stuff. But the problem that I'm always gonna have, and the one problem that I will always have, is that if you have a guy performing every single day, and I'm not just talking about Dolph, I'm talking about a lot of other guys too. If you have these guys performing at a top level, like you look at Sandow and Sheamus, both those guys had great matches. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, I think I even said, like, you know, both, there's no losers in that match. Both of them turned out to be winners, you know. Yeah. If you have these guys that just keep on, you know, like Team Hell No, you know, beating the Road Scholars, it's like, dude, is the Road Scholars time to win it, you know? Right. You know, I don't need an out for them to argue with each other in Raw for them to lose it. You know, I mean, I want to see it legitly happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, the one thing that I always, like, just get frustrated about is that these guys that can go in the ring and prove it every single week, and then, you know, they still hit that glass ceiling,
right.
And nothing else happens, you know. And it's kind of given to guys that are already kind of established as being like, okay, this guy is going to be a heavyweight champion. And that's kind of what Del Rio was. When Del Rio first came in, he was, like, already given that he was going to be champion. They gave him the belt real fast,
right.
And you know, this time around they've enabled him to kind of build a swell of support to do that. So now when he does it, he gets a great pop. But you have these guys over here too that people are just going to go crazy over, and it's kind of funny. So I'm going back to that guy on Twitter saying, like, well, are you paying for WrestleMania, you know, to pay for it now or set up your next pay per views? So, you know, I'm kind of back and forth on it. You know, it's like, yeah. You know, it's like, well, if you bring these guys up. And you show what they can do, like Cesaro is a perfect example. You know, I mean, this guy, I had no interest in this guy. Mm-hmm. Now I'm seeing what they can do. He's still jobbing all the time, but he's way better than the guy that
he's jobbing.
Yeah, you know. So it's like, if you build those guys up, you know, what I'd like to see is, instead of all these young guys going against established guys like Kane, or, you know, even, like, it's funny we're saying Daniel Bryan's like established now. But, like, Cesaro, you know, Cesaro versus Barrett, or Sandow versus Cesaro, you know, because that's what happened with The Rock and Triple H, you know, The Rock and Stone Cold, is that, you know, back then they weren't the established guys or the up-and-coming guys.
Yeah, well, they had, like, wars over the Intercontinental belt for years before,
yeah.
they finally made it up, and then they started fighting over the world title.
Yeah, and so I wouldn't mind seeing that, and I think that might be able to solve a little bit of problems on that end too.
Yeah, well, and the other thing too is like I'm looking at now we're on this road to WrestleMania, and a lot of what makes us interested in what's happening is like, you know, what are the storylines, where the storylines are going, right? So you have all these guys that are there all the time and have these storylines going. But then, right for the biggest show, you're going to bring a bunch of guys that essentially have no storyline. I mean, Undertaker's storyline is just showing up and pointing at a sign, right? Triple H, Brock Lesnar. I mean, why? I mean, because he broke Shawn Michaels. Because he kayfabe broke Shawn Michaels' arm a year ago. I mean, that's...
Well, but I'm gonna have to stop you right now. I mean, because I thought the Brock segment at the end of Raw, I thought that was very well done. I think that can open up a ton of other avenues in terms of storytelling.
I agree 100%, but not necessarily with Triple H. I mean, that's just like bring he might as well drag the dead horse down to the ring with him so he could beat it up a little bit.
But if you bring in Paul Heyman into the storyline picture. You know, and you're able to do that, then I start getting more interested about it. I agree with you. You know, Triple H fighting Brock Lesnar because he broke Shawn Michaels' arm, I really don't care about that.
Right.
And him breaking Triple H's arm, I don't care about that. But if you're able to bring in kind of what they did at the end of Raw where Brock Lesnar F5 Vince and then Paul Heyman was just, I mean, talk about like going, playing both sides, you know, playing the straight heel and then he's starting to fight for Vince and stuff. And
yeah.
I thought his whole thing like, in the corner saying, like, you know, just get out of the ring, Vince. You know, just he just played it. I mean, he's been doing this.
Yeah, no, he's great, man.
He's been doing this week in and week out. So I'm saying if you can have Heyman bring along that storyline, then you bring in Triple H, I'm going to be more interested in it because I know there's a worker in Heyman that can tell a better story than Brock and Triple H by themselves.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is, I mean, he also presents the possible idea that, and I would really like to see this, like something like back in our day again, Bobby Heenan and the family, right? I mean, you got Heyman with Punk, you got Heyman with the connection with Brock now. They've introduced the idea that Heyman's been paying the Shield.
Well, you bring up Bobby Heenan, and I wouldn't want to see Bobby Heenan and the family. What I would want to see is I want to see Paul Heyman with the big ass cell phone. Because you never saw it when he's carrying on this big old...
The Zach Morris?
Yeah, that big old cell phone.
I remember. The back when Jim Cornette was rocking the tennis racket.
The night court cell phones, remember? Yeah. But that's the whole thing, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's... But, like, now that the elements...
It's just the whole Bobby Heenan thing with the family. I'm just like, come on, man. That thing is so cheesy, but yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, they haven't allowed a manager to put a stable together in forever, right? And now, you know, Shield's a good stable. If Shield stays on their own, I got no problem with that at all. I mean, the way they played it pretty well on the show to where, you know, you could say it's connected to Punk, or you could just say they were kind of independent contractors that Heyman just paid when he needed a job done. So it's not like they have to put them all together. But if they wanted to go that direction, you know, I was never a big fan of the Nexus, right? But it had a lot of potential. And like I said, the biggest problem with the Nexus was you had a bunch of guys that sucked in the group. But now, if you have a big group like that, all those guys can go. All those guys are really good. And then you could really have something going if you have all those guys together and a bunch of them carry some belts, right? And they can all back each other up. I mean, it can get pretty interesting if they wanted to go that direction. But at the very least, I mean, you could see some kind of connection between Punk, Heyman, and Brock happening.
Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah, you know, and the Undertaker, well, I guess the thing I'm trying to say is that last year they brought in Brock out of nowhere, and then they set up a really quick storyline, and then it just ended like that. So, you know, but with what they kind of did tonight on Raw, I can see something else happening where more of a story gets involved, where I would actually want to see it. Now, look at who the players are. You know, you have Paul Heyman, who I'm going to watch. You know, I'll watch Paul Heyman on TV any time of the week because he's good.
Mm-hmm.
You have Brock Lesnar, who is the muscle for Paul Heyman. And then, of course, you have Vince, who's starting to play the whole, like, you know, it's kind of funny. He's doing the whole, like, you know, kissing the baby angle, you know, and, like, now he's a good guy and stuff. And when he's playing such a straight heel, which is totally fine with me. I mean, the guy's, like, what, 70-some-odd years old. I mean, he can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah.
You know, so you have those list of characters in there. So I would be interested to see how, if Undertaker is coming back, if that's the storyline that's going to happen. If it's just a straight storyline, it's like, I want my best against your best, and some people are saying, like, you know, our audition for a CM Punk Undertaker match. It's like, well, why? You know, why would you want a CM Punk Undertaker match? Because Undertaker's not going to pass a torch. Undertaker's streak is going to, it's never going to be broken.
No.
And I'm totally fine with that. You know, right. But it's like, but why, you know, I guess that's another problem I have with the streak too, is that whoever they put him with that guy, it's like sort of your foregone conclusion. You know, put him with Kane. He's already beat Kane 10 times in WrestleMania, you know?
Yeah.
You know, or bring back, like, you know, Jimmy Superfly Snooker or something like that. He can beat up on, you know, Superfly Snooker or something. But, you know,
Jake the Snake's doing that DDP yoga. He got in shape now. Maybe he can come back and fight The Undertaker.
Or are we going to start talking about John Morrison teaming up the Miz again too, or what? But, yeah, you know, I'm just saying, like, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they can do the same type of thing with The Undertaker. I don't think they can. But if they start bringing those elements in terms of storytelling, and I know that for about 4 or 5 months, the WWE universe is going to be kind of up in flux. And, yeah, I can get behind that. But the problem that I can't get behind is that I know that come WrestleMania, Cena will be the champion again. And then we'll have to see where it goes. Because we've been in a golden age of wrestling programming, and I don't know if the ratings have been there or if the money's been there. But story-wise and developing wrestler wise, it's been a good ride.
I've enjoyed this year of Punk's championship more than probably the last five of watching wrestling. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with Punk too, right? And the fact that, you know, a lot of it might have to do with the fact that it's not Cena, but it wasn't just like I'm happy because it's not Cena. I mean, CM Punk had a great run. Made me a big fan of his. I was starting to turn his way, you know, with the new Nexus thing. But I mean, now this run was great. His mic work's been tremendous. His ring work's been tremendous too.
Well, I think it's kind of funny. Like, you know, before we started the podcast, we had a list of ideas that we were going to talk about: Royal Rumble, stuff that happened on Raw today. But who do we end up talking about? You know, it's CM Punk. You know, and why are we talking about CM Punk? Is because the guy has been doing the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a part of me that's kind of afraid. You know, it's like, it's as much of CM Punk as he's done in terms of his work with everybody else, I think he's fine because he's shown over and over again that he can adapt to any situation. Okay. And hell, if it doesn't happen that way, then maybe we get another, you know, shoot promo or something like that. You know, he actually gets to say what's on his mind. But, you know, if we're gonna, I don't want to put a bow on CM Punk, because I can see, you know, it's funny. It's like you have Triple H, a 7-time champion. You know, John Cena is like, what, a 9-time or 10-time champion. Well, hell, I mean, CM Punk can be a 5 or 6-time champion. It's funny, all the good ones don't always have like that many numbers. I think The Rock is like, what, a 7-time champion.
This is number 8. But
number 8, yeah.
I actually read that if you add up all the days of his 8 title reigns, it still doesn't equal CM Punk's 434.
Yeah.
So that says a lot. I think that says a whole lot.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, as new as wrestling is, CM Punk to me is the biggest throwback to the era that we grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the 434 days, I think that's huge, you know, and I think you're right. You know, it's like, it's a huge accomplishment. And, I wouldn't mind seeing it again. You know, I mean, if I have to wait 6 months or 8 months, I wouldn't mind seeing it again. I want to, you know, because the whole thing, the difference between CM Punk and John Cena is that with CM Punk, you knew that any guy that he was going to face, you're going to get the best out of that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get the best match out of that guy could do at that time.
Yeah.
CM Punk style, I mean, Cena's title reign, it's like, let's just throw fodder for John Cena. It's like, you look at the list of guys that he's faced, he hasn't made any of them better, you know. And I think, you know, you have, you know, Daniel Bryan, he legitimized Ryback, you know. Name some of the other guys he's, you know, Chris Jericho, you know, Jericho did the job for him, and, you know, Cena did the job for him too. It's probably the better matches that Cena has, because lo and behold, he didn't kick out of every fucking thing, you know, that was there, you know. So I mean, it's just you know, I'd be really interested to see, you know, Cena win the title at WrestleMania. And if Ziggler comes off, then you have these two kind of... And the funny thing is, too, is that you have these two guys that were fighting kind of before these title runs. But, you know, at Royal Rumble, Ziggler was kind of hinting that he wanted to unify the titles. So there might be something there, too. You know, and I think, you know, A big smile goes across my man's face.
Nah,
you know?
I read some stuff like that, with like things like if Ziggler could win the Rumble, then he could get the one. Then he could cash in Money in the Bank and for his World Heavyweight Championship, and then go for the WWF title. Which I know they're never gonna let that happen. But no, I knew that little thought was out there. Would have been cool, but you know he's not in the position in the company where he can do something like that yet. Like, you know, I was very surprised that the first guy that they ever let unify a belt was Chris Jericho. I mean, he totally earned it.
Well, signs are there, dude. I mean, because Jericho's back, he's teaming with Ziggler again. You know, so go ahead. But you know.
I'm just saying, like Jericho was a much more established guy at the point when, even though he was kind of new to WWE, he was a lot more established pro when he got that first unified title run than Ziggler is right now. So I couldn't see them handing that much to Dolph Ziggler at this point. Hell, I'm not even sure they're going to give him the World Heavyweight Championship anymore, to be honest. They're slow playing that thing so bad. But it would be good. It would be really interesting. What was I going to say too? I was going to say, oh man.
Here we go. The clock's ticking.
Here we go. Tick, 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 tock, tick, tock.
So now you got me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Terrible, man.
No, I'm sorry.
That's horrible, man. Get the hell out of my house, man. Get out.
Stop, sir.
So here's one thing, though, that I've kind of noticed, and we've said it before, but why is SmackDown kicking Raw's ass every single week in and week out? I mean, every SmackDown that I watch is, like, way heads above better than Raw is.
It's for the last 2 years, it's been just a pure wrestling show. You don't have Cena bogging down everything, right? So, you know, and to certain ways, like, Sheamus has kind of become Cena light in a lot of ways, but at least Sheamus puts on a good match, and Sheamus doesn't pander as bad with his promos, and his promos, even though sometimes they're getting a little campy, like, they're still pretty much short and sweet. He doesn't drag on and on about, like, you know, whatever the hell he thinks he's going to do, right? He just kind of gets to the point. But all the guys there can go, and they're all pretty even. It's like, so they can all wrestle, and there's no real, real dominant guy. Like, Sheamus is kind of a dominant guy. Orton wins a bunch of matches, but aside from that, pretty much anybody could win any match on SmackDown. I think that's what keeps it interesting. I think there might be something to the fact that it's a 2-hour show, so they can keep it a little tighter.
Oh yeah, And who was saying that way back when?
I'll give you credit. I'm not saying that the 3-hour show is bad. I like the idea that they can put more content in on a Raw, but it is kind of nice to watch SmackDown, just a nice tight concise show. The other thing too, I think I really like is I like Booker, man. I think Booker's really, really good.
Booker, it's all about the entrance, you know. I love Booker to death, but yeah. I mean, that's kind of the other thing too. We're talking about Punk, but Punk really started to
take off when he went
the Cult of Personality. I was like, all right, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Booker's the same way, you know. With that, you know, when that song hits, Jericho's the exact same way too. I mean, yeah. Jericho's interested. I got goosebumps, man, like watching that thing, you know. So, yeah. But yeah, go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, aside from the entrance, I mean, like, he on the mic, he's really good. He's almost better now on the mic than he was back when he was wrestling. But he keeps the show moving. He's very forceful in the stuff that he does. I'm not gonna sit here and continue to bash Vicky Guerrero. I mean,
she's becoming a fan favorite over there, though, D.
Maybe
she's a fan favorite today.
Doesn't mean she's good
because you're a boy Ziggler, man.
But I mean, if anyone has heard any of the other podcasts or anything, I got nothing to say about Vicky at this point. But Booker, if Booker was the general manager of Raw, I think it's a lot better. Because he's very forceful in the stuff. When he wants to come out and make a match, like, if he says something, like, even, like, a couple of times in the last month, like, he'll get in Big Show's face, and Big Show won't back down, he won't back down to him, but he won't attack him. Like Booker has that presence. Other thing that I really think helps out SmackDown that I was noticing today was
the big JBL.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. go ahead.
You need a real heel announcer. Yeah, and he's the only one they got in the company.
And JBL did a great job today on Raw. Especially, like, it's funny because I could really tell that Cole was taking the whole baby face to, like, a T. And one thing that I want to bring up with Royal Rumble is that I like how the Shield was implicated in putting Rock through the table and stuff, but it was dark the whole time. You know, like, the lights were off the whole time.
But Michael Cole saw it.
One guy saw it. Yeah, it was Michael Cole. And so, like, you know, and I wouldn't mind them playing that up a little bit more. It was like, you know, CM Punk has a general beef. It's like, how do you know it was a Shield? You know, it's like, it could have been someone else, you know, or maybe it was the Undertaker, you know, or, you know, the Undertaker, Brock, and Triple H and Shawn Michaels, you know, coming through or something like that, you know, but even like today, he was talking about, so when the Shield came out, and then, you know, they're just talking about how the Shield was messing everything up, and then there was another match later on in Raw where, you know, JBL was comparing it to the Shield, same type of injustice or whatever it was. Well, if I can't remember it, I can't remember it. But the one spot that really stood out to me today, and I don't think we really hit on, was, but we hit on it last week with the Shield, was, you know, last week you were saying that you want to see them start doing some matches and stuff, and I was saying, like, no, I don't want to do it because I want them to be legitimate heels. And so they come out today against John Cena, and then Sheamus comes out. And you're like, okay, here we go. Like, okay, we know that they can take on both these guys at the same time, you know, with John Cena and Sheamus. They can kind of get the upper hand here and there. And then Ryback comes out. It's like, okay, you know, and I was just kind of watching it, you know, because I knew it was going to happen. It's like, well, okay, I know for a while that the Shield will do okay. And then when Ryback came out, I was like, okay, it's the beginning of the end. You know, now that the three guys are going to come over. And, man, it's just like everything that the Shield did today was just, it's like they're starting to become classic, you know, it's like starting to become... Yeah. You know, like the way Ambrose just cuts everybody off in the ring, and you have the other guy, Seth Rollins, just kind of, you know, going back and forth. And then, to me, the biggest thing was, and they kind of showed it again, was that, you know, Ryback came and he knocked the two people out, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. They both went over, yeah. And then he tries to go 1-on-1 versus Reigns, and he can't do it.
Reigns backs up to the rope.
Yeah, yeah. He's getting the upper hand. I mean, Ryback's getting the upper hand, and then, you know, Ambrose and Seth Rollins drag him out and stuff, and you know, they throw him into the steps and stuff, and then, you know, Sheamus comes in and starts doing it, but then they throw him into the post. I mean, just great spots by Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
And to me, like, the crowning achievement of that whole thing is so they finally get Cena back in, right? You know they're gonna set up for the triple powerbomb, and Reigns just does that yell, dude. I marked out at that. It's like that was like perfect, dude. You know,
for Roman Reigns' primal roar.
Yeah, it's
like gets you to mark out.
You gotta have that primal scream, dude. But yeah. No, just what he did. I mean, him putting his arms out and just like yelling at the top of his voice and stuff, and like it's about time, man. And that was a good spot to see. That was legit. You know, is good. You know, and JBL really sold that segment. You know, right. Like he says, like, you know, oh, they got the numbers. He's like, you know, that's a well-oiled machine right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, JBL sold it, but I thought that was a great segment. It was about time. Yeah, I'm sitting there going, like, it's about time. Like when Dave Winfield hit his 500th home run or something like that. It's about time, you know. But that's pretty much the way I was with that. So
yeah, well, and I'm kind of, you know, I do want to see them wrestle just because I want to see how good they are. But I am kind of coming around to your way of thinking in that there's an aura of invincibility about them that they've never been beaten. I mean, they've only had one match, and they won the match. But, you know, they've never really... Maybe one time they got cleared out of the ring by Ryback when there was even numbers. But no one's ever really taken it to the Shield. And that was kind of one thing, you know, you're thinking, like, okay, 30-man Rumble, probably the Shield's going to be in there. But, you know, and I think for me, if I'm sitting there watching it and hoping the Shield's going to come out, like, I could see myself being kind of disappointed, but the more I was thinking about it, I was like, you know, none of those three is going to win the match. So maybe it is better off that they don't be in it. If they had came in and, say, interfered in the Rumble, that could have been a good thing, like started pulling people out that they thought didn't deserve to win or something. That could have been a good spot. But I'm kind of agreeing with you now that, like not having them lose and having them continue to just do run-ins, you know, it can still work for a while.
Well, the thing with the Shield is, you know, when it was Ryback, Randy Orton, and Sheamus, and they got the better of them. They got the better of the Shield. You know, they clobbered the Shield and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of reality with it. You know, it's like, because the whole thing, what makes the Shield so good is that you have a guy like Dean Ambrose. And you look at Dean Ambrose, he's like, well, he's not an overpowering figure. The guy just can kick some fucking ass. You know, and you have like a guy like Seth Rollins. You look at Seth Rollins, like, okay, this guy's probably more of a technician. You know, his body type, he's probably a really fast guy that can lend some power. And then you have Roman Reigns. You know, Roman Reigns is just a straight powerhouse. But the thing is that when they get the upper hand, it's believable.
Right.
When they lose, it's believable. You know, it's not like a case where, you know, and I'm always bringing back War Games with the Four Horsemen, but, you know, when the faces beat the Four Horsemen, they just hulked up like crazy. You know, hulking up and going all crazy. You know, and it wasn't believable. Uh-huh. You know, like you had this great heel faction, but, you know, you just had these guys that, you know, if they got punched in the face, they would just hulk up and go like, you know, it didn't hurt them and stuff like that. Case in point being Nikolai Volkov or whatever it was. But when you look at, like, today, you know, it's like they took they took John Cena, you know, John Cena got squashed real fast.
Yeah.
You know, Sheamus came out, cleared house just for a little bit. Ryback came out, cleared house. But when they got the upper hand, it was believable. Uh-huh. You know, and there's no nonsense with it. Yeah. You know, it's like if they're gonna lose, they're gonna lose. If they're gonna win, they're gonna win. And what they really kind of remind me of is they remind me of a Hall and Nash. You know, like when Hall and Nash, when they got the upper hand, you know, legit. Yeah, when they lost, they lost.
Yeah.
And there's no heel antics about it. It's like your best against my best, and my best wasn't good that day. And I missed that. You know, that's kind of something that I missed with Punk too towards the end of his title reign, was that he had to cheat all the time. It's like, well,
that's the thing that I was going to mention that I couldn't remember before is maybe now that Punk doesn't have the belt, maybe he might go back to winning straight again, and being, you know, being a straight heel but a winning heel. Because that's the one thing that they don't really have right now. It's like heels that win, you know, that win legitimately. So that was, since you brought that up, that actually was what I wanted to say that other time. But yeah, no, I mean, yeah, like I said, I'm kind of coming to your way of thinking with the Shield, though I do like seeing them all the time, and I do kind of want to see them. But it also kind of brings me to another thought that I've had about there's been this influx of talent, right?
Look at that! When you get it on, dude, you gotta say that. That was a professional segment. Yeah. I'm sure it was. I mean, I'm stuttering like a motherfucker over here.
Now you messed it up.
No. People heard it.
Yeah. So you got the Shield coming out. They're on the show regularly, but you never see them wrestle. You got Big E Langston that's there on the show all the time, but you never see him wrestle. So there's this whole influx of guys coming up from NXT, and I think, I mean, it looks like WWE's NXT program is doing a really good job of training guys and getting them ready. But I'm not seeing any of these guys actually perform. And I just don't quite understand. Like, I know on the one hand, it's like WWE is looking, they keep saying they're looking for, like, good hand wrestlers to come be, like, mid-carders and wrestle with guys. But then, so if you want to do that, like, to bring in, like, a Shelton Benjamin, an MVP, a Carlito, which was rumored, which I was really hoping Carlito came through. Like, you know, that's great. But you can't, like, be trying to bring guys like that in and bring up all these young NXT guys. It's just going to be way too much guys because, you know, none of them are really going to get over anyway. So, like, I just don't quite understand. And especially, like, what we're talking about on this road to WrestleMania, where you know you're bringing back Triple H. You know you're bringing back Undertaker. Like, why do you want to bring all these young guys and then just have them there but don't do anything? And then all of a sudden, here comes Bo Dallas out of nowhere. Which, I mean, you know, I'm interested to see what Bo Dallas can do. I mean, you know, we were the first guys in San Jose Arena yelling Mike Rotunda. I mean, we're both big Husky Harris fans, right? And so, you know, Bo Dallas, you know, he looks like a lot more athletic. You know, he's the younger brother of Husky Harris, so like a pretty athletic looking guy. But like, I don't see how he comes out of nowhere and gets the match.
Well, I would take Husky Harris any day of the week. I mean, that guy was legit.
I would. Really?
I mean, let's flip it on the other side, though. Is maybe, you know, instead of going like, well, what can they do for WWE? Well, what are they doing for NXT right now? And I'm thinking, you know, like, maybe that's the reason why it's like, because right now NXT you can only get on, like, I think it's Hulu, I think. Maybe Hulu Plus that you can, mm-hmm. you can get the stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've actually been thinking about getting it. Mm-hmm. So, but if I think it might be a case where, you know, they bring out, you know, the Dallas guy to say, like, oh, this guy, you know, is a major player in NXT and this, that, and this. So maybe it's a case where they can get more people to go to Hulu and purchase, you know, to pay for it to watch NXT.
So you think maybe they're just showing them on TV to get some buzz so people will start to say, well, what's going on with NXT?
Yeah.
Okay. And, yeah, that makes sense.
And, well, you know, it's the kind of funny thing is that, you know, everything that I've seen from NXT, everything that I've heard from NXT is like, it's just, to me, it's a really old style type wrestling show, you know, if you will, on the mothership, you know, so, you know, but I, you
with
know,
lots of clubbering,
you know, yeah, but you know, you're going to have, I mean, I don't think Husky Harris is on there anymore, but
he is. He's been hurt. He just started coming back.
McGillicuddy. You have all these guys that, you know, you have these legit guys that, you know, that know how to, that are busting their chops in there. So maybe that's a case where they start doing that. I don't see the NXT guys coming up, you know, to kind of make a name for themselves in WWE, at least not now. But I think it's more of a case of like, you know, okay, let's get more subscribers to Hulu Plus, and, you know, because I really think WWE is really trying to, you know, maximize all the potential they have with all their properties and entities, with everything that they're doing with.
That makes sense. You know, I mean, it's like I see a guy like Biggie Langston. And, you know, I'd heard about him for about a year, and they're saying that he's doing a lot of good work. And then, you know, if you read, like, JR's Twitter feed, or you read, like Regal's Twitter feed, you know, they all speak really highly of the guy. And then he comes up, he has a pretty big first appearance, you know, he puts Cena down, and then you never see the guy wrestle a match. And it's like, why? Like, why are they bringing him up? Like, because it just, you know, he's basically an ineffective bodyguard for Dolph Ziggler right now.
Like, what do you mean? Ziggler wins all the time, dude. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I think he won once, like, 3 months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the last time he won a match.
And Biggie, well, I mean, look who his opponent was. I mean, it's like, any other person would be able to, like, wouldn't be able to kick out of, like, three finishers. Two from the guy he's wrestling, and one from Biggie Langston, you know. But,
right, but I mean,
they are facing Cena, so he kicks out of everything.
Yeah, right. But what I'm saying is, okay, let's say your goal is, you want Ziggler to look good, and you want Langston to look menacing, right? So then, why you shouldn't be booking him against John Cena? You should be booking him against guys that you're going to actually let Ziggler beat and let Langston look strong. Like right now, he's just an ineffective bodyguard. You know, he's there, he's strong. I mean, I've seen,
you got to be patient, man. You got to be patient. You know, well, these things happen. You know, they happen over the course of, and I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it was just.
But at the same time, it's like, he's playing the character that he's playing. And it's going to take time. I mean, the guy is in, he's in WWE programming right now. People know who he is. A lot of the other NXT guys, they come up for one time and they go back down, you know? So.
People know me. That's what Big E walks around town saying. I'm kind of a big deal. Kind of big. People know me.
And it's his bookcase.
Yeah.
His bookcase.
Merlin Olsen comes to hang out every once in a while.
Yeah, and his apartment smells of rich mahogany.
That's
stuff
true. This is true.
But he'd say it a lot slower and a lot more kind of
deliberate.
Yeah.
and the guy that I really want to see of all the NXT guys that still they're still killing me on is Steamboat, man. I just got a feeling Ricky Steamboat's going to be the deal. And I was really surprised he wasn't even in that 8-man tournament to get that spot for the Rumble. So I really don't know what that means. I mean, I guess maybe that means Bo Dallas is higher on the pecking order than he is. But I, like, from everything I'm reading, like, Richie's been traveling around with the Raw for a month or two. So it kept looking like there was a teaser tweet a couple of weeks ago. I thought his call up was imminent. So I don't know why. Of all the guys that's getting the call, it's not him. But just like I said, I would think if you're going to bring up
Because the problem is because you got to squeeze in Kali and Hornswoggle.
Oh yeah, sorry.
And Natalya. I mean, that's the reason why.
I forgot about that. I got to get my tadpole splash fix.
Yeah.
But it's just. I mean, I would think like the traditional way, the way that things usually happen is when they bring a guy up and then they introduce him, they make a splash, right? Like, you know, for Del Rio, for example. Like, when Del Rio came up, it's like, you know, you got a few of those promos, and then when they finally brought him out, he came out in wrestling, and he's beating guys, right? When
Tensai came out?
Yes.
Yeah.
For about a month, he was beating guys, right?
Yeah, and he didn't speak any English either. Now he is, yeah.
Yeah, especially when he's wearing his lingerie.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, when...
I never thought I'd say this, but I miss Lord Tensai. You know, Tensai. I don't like this Tensai. I miss the Lord Tensai.
Kevin Sai. How sure we never went to a hot.
Here comes the Lord. Here comes the Lord.
But when Ziggler came up years ago, right? You know, he had about a month or so where he just walked around introducing himself. But then they put him in matches, right? Sandow, you know, when they brought him up, they put him in matches. They didn't have him walking around you know, doing nothing for months at a time. It just doesn't quite sit well with me. It's like, you know, it's fine if they didn't want to bring him up or whatever. But I know what you're saying makes sense. If they're trying to bring some exposure to NXT, I guess that's the most legitimate reasoning I've heard. But just from a building of a character standpoint, it just seems like the wrong way to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, right now after the, you know, it's kind of funny. It's like when you get to the Royal Rumble and you're done with the Royal Rumble, that's really to me the start of the WrestleMania, you know, and so everything's been set. You know, we knew that John Cena was going to win. So now we're just kind of in a wait and see mode. You know, I mean, it's funny, like the Elimination Chamber, you know, it's not going to involve a champion. You know, I think the Elimination Chamber is just too, it's too physical for The Rock or CM Punk to do it. So it'd be interesting to see who's going to be in the Elimination Chamber. Why they even have the Elimination Chamber. You know, I mean, I really don't get what's going to be on the line. Unless it's another belt that's going to be on the line. But,
Well, no, they don't. Usually there's two chamber matches and the title's on the line in both, right?
But they just said, like, for this one, I'm thinking what I got out of this is it's going to be Rock and CM Punk at Elimination Chamber for the rematch.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So, it'll be interesting to see how that storyline develops. You know, kind of the things that we're waiting for is, you know, will Ziggler cash his stuff in? You know, where, you know, if I have to hear, you know, another Cena promo talking about how he's going to be in WrestleMania, you know, we are going to get another empty arena where Cena's, you know, talking to himself and scratching his head and like looking up at the Almighty and the Almighty Green Dollar Bill. And just saying, like, how's the biggest thing for him? So, it'll be interesting to see. I think Raw, you know, SmackDown, we're gonna get wrestling. You know, we're gonna get, you know, we're talking early on about the Intercontinental kind of tournament they're gonna do to see who's gonna go for it.
I think that's gonna be mostly on main event though.
Main event, okay. Which I haven't seen.
I found it. I do have it. I found it last Wednesday. Yeah. So. It's actually pretty decent. I mean, there's only like two or three matches, but it was a.
It's like an hour show.
It's like an hour show, yeah. And then I think the main event was the Usos and Primetime Players.
Yeah,
and it was a pretty good match.
Oh yeah, I mean, you bring in those talents. I just get so burned out. I mean, there's so much that I have to consume in terms of wrestling. You know, yeah. I might do if it's just like two or three, you know, matches and they're just straight matches without the promos and stuff. Maybe I start going for it. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy with SmackDown. Yeah. I mean, to me, SmackDown, you know, as JBL says, you know, we fight on Friday nights, and hell yeah, they fight on Friday nights. You know, so
yeah, it's a good thing to like have like your work week's done. You go home on Friday, and you can go watch SmackDown and watch. You know, take about an hour and a half to get through a bunch of good matches.
Yeah, well, it takes me an hour because I fast forward everything.
Yeah,
but yeah. No, but I actually watch matches there.
I like when I come over here. Oh, yeah, this is the best match of the night. Fast forward it.
you're going to happen, yeah. No, but I mean, the Sandow, the match of the night to me was Sandow and Sheamus.
I was really impressed with the way Sandow used the tables, like, in a lot of ways that I haven't really seen them used before, you know? Like, the way he stood the table on its side and then, like, threw Sheamus' chest down in there. Finish was really good.
Yeah.
It was pretty innovative stuff, the way he put Sheamus' arm in there. It's pretty innovative stuff, especially for a guy who they purported has never been in a table match before.
Well, I mean, the whole thing, I mean, with Sandow is that the guy was trained by Killer Kowalski, and it shows in the ring. It's just a very methodical style, more like kind of like a Triple H, you know, just very hard-hitting, very technical, and very, I mean, the storytelling was just great of that match. It's like, you know, you knew Sheamus was going to win, but of course, there was that span of maybe 20 or 25 seconds where you thought to yourself, oh, maybe Sandow's going to win this, you know, and then when Sheamus did the white noise, you know, with Sandow through the table, great spot, but at the same time, it's like, we're big Sandow marks, you know, I like Sheamus, but I'm no Sandow mark. I wasn't mad about that match, it was a good match,
yeah.
You know, so, you know, we'll see how it goes, you know, with the next Raw. I think we can just keep on rehashing stuff over again, but let's kind of finish it off, and I'll let you do that. But the one thing I do, I want to take some time out. First of all, I want to thank my producer, JPCAD19 or whatever it is. Is that what it is? It's my brother's handle. I don't even know what it is. But But, you know, JP Cal 19 something.
I think it's like JP Marine hashtag CENA, something like that.
And then on his profile, it's like, you know, shedding a tear for every dead gas attendant out there, you know. You know, at the end of the Marine, there's like 25 gas attendants died in the making of this film. But yeah, so I do want to take a time out to for all the for all those dead gas attendants out there. Every time a Marine movie comes out, I know a gas attendant will have to die, which is a travesty. But you know, you're bringing up NXT, and there's that one Japanese wrestler in NXT that I kind of wanted to brush up on a little bit. You know, he was kind of with Tensai for a little bit, and you know, I remember when the guy came out, I was like, man, like they're not using this guy because of the stuff that he did in Japan. So the one move that he was bringing up. Don't you have to close out the show?
Isn't this when he brings the rice out?
Yeah. But we're actually running out of time, so you got to close the show like you always do.
What?
So,
next time. Talk about Mr. Sakamoto?
No, I'll talk about next show.
Oh, next time.
Yeah, when we got more time.
All right. Well, you know, typically I would take this segment to talk about Eve, which, hi, Eve, we miss you. But what I'll do in lieu of that is just really quickly say that I like that they're going to be inducting Trish into the Hall of Fame. Was some fabulous television seeing the highlights of the assets of Miss Stratus. But no, I think she was a great diva, and specifically because the way she started out, she was not a very good wrestler at all. But she really worked her ass off, and by the time she got halfway through, you know, she really was a good wrestler, and that was probably the best time for divas, like in terms of like having the combination of chicks that, you know, you like to look at, but they could still wrestle. And she did a really good job, so I'm glad she's getting inducted in the Hall of Fame. You know, I'll pretty much leave it at that with Trish, unless you want to say anything.
Well, I think any compliment that I can give any diva wrestler, female wrestler, is that, and this goes with Eve too, as good as Trish Stratus looked in magazines and in her photo shoots, and as good as she was good to look at, by the end of her career, I forgot about all that stuff because the thing that I saw was her ring work. You know, and it's funny, like you're kind of looking at the, you're kind of looking at her little chronology and stuff, and she comes out and she's in the ice cream truck.
The ice cream man is coming.
Yeah, coming being the keyword.
Yes.
But you're just going like, God damn, dude. But then you kind of see all the stuff and the emotions she brought out, and just the ring work that she did. As good as she was on the magazines and stuff like that, to me she was better in the ring. And to me, Eve is the exact same way. As good as Eve, I mean, sometimes you forget, you know, you look at Eve, you're like, damn. You know, like, yeah. Wow. But, you know, and it kind of takes you back and you step back and go, well, wait a minute, like, you know, this is a great looking girl and stuff and everything like that, but the thing that I remember is her ring work. And the thing I remember with Trish Stratus was her ring work at the end, about how she brought out the best in everybody. Lita's the same way. And to
Lita was polished from the beginning.
Yeah.
The thing that I like about Trish is, and I think Eve is a good example. It's like when they both started, like they were green as hell, and Eve botched a lot of stuff. But at this point, when she just, you know, I'm not going to say retired, but left, she is just starting to come into her own as an actual in-ring performer. And Trish kind of had that exact same curve. She was pretty bad, honestly, when she first started. And right about that same point in her career that Eve would have been at now is when Trish really started to take off. And then she didn't leave. You know, she continued to wrestle. And so by the time that she did end up retiring, I mean, she was a great wrestler. And, like, you know, I'm sure Eve is going to come back. And I do see that same kind of career pattern for her if she does come back. And, you know, because the work that she obviously put in to get better, she could, you know, be on that level of a Trish Stratus if she comes back and
So you did end up talking about Eve in this last segment. So we still found a way. Good job there, man. I like it. No, I think, yeah. I mean, everything you said about Trish, you know, is right on. I'm not going to try to say anything more to that. You know, the thing with Eve that I think gives Eve a slight edge is I think her characters are a whole lot better. The character that she played is a lot more believable to me than any character that Trish played. But it was a different time, you know. I mean, Trish was so good to look at. It's like, you didn't care. It's like, you know, she could sell you like a dried fish or something like that. You'd be like, yeah, man, I'll take it. So, yeah. So, you know, leafless lettuce. She could sell you leafless lettuce or, you know, or powdered water. You know, if she could be a powdered water salesman, I'd still buy the powdered water, you know? Just add water. So there you go. So let's go and finish it off. And
I'll also shout out to Bob Backlund then, since we're doing our little Hall of Fame thing, breaking back outs like Bob Backlund. Yeah.
That was Method Man, by the way. But yeah.
Thank you.
I'm throwing wrestling holds. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, I think, the Rumble ended up, you know, it was chalk. It was what everyone thought was going to be in terms of the results, but the matches seemed to be pretty good. Raw was pretty good. You know, I think it kind of started good with the Punk, promo, and then there was a little bit of a lull. It picked up at the end.
Last hour. Yeah.
I'm a big Jericho mark. So
no, you're not, man. Come on.
Oh yeah.
No one knows that.
Yeah, because you know, don't get mad just because I discovered it, dude.
Yeah.
Just leave that.
Yeah, way back when. Yeah. When you call me on the phone or tell me about this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Lionheart.
Yeah. That ain't nothing. That ain't nothing.
So no, but I mean, dude, that's it for me. And Jericho being back, that's getting me amped up. So I'm really excited for that, and. We'll see what happens. I don't know that the results are going to be what I'm exactly looking for, but if I get a good program with Jericho and Ziggler again, like I'll be a happy guy. So, you know, Road to WrestleMania has commenced, and things are business is picking up.
And it's the end of an era, you know. And let's just leave it at that. You know, it's the end of a great championship run, and I think when you look back on championship runs, you're going to remember this championship run with CM Punk, so.
Yeah, no, I think so, and... I think there's still more to come. I mean, I think he's definitely got a couple of good championship runs left in him, too. So we'll look forward to that. Yeah. Well done, Punk. And let's just see how the road unfurls on the way down to Mania.
And he's now a two-time champion, CM Punk, walking to the ring right now. That has a good ring to it. I want to hear that sometime in the future, so. Yeah, move skill.
That's it, move skill.
Right. Joining us in the studio today are two masters of their styles. Stronger than ever. Back by the pen. No matter what style of music you're into, from punk to funk. Back by the pen. It's all here on Volume 2. You asked for it, you got it.